91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Virginia Key is a natural barrier island in Biscayne Bay. It's accessible by car from the Rickenbacker Causeway, the toll road which reaches Key Biscayne from the Brickell area. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Virginia Key's history figures in the national civil rights movement, as well as the region's integration efforts, which culminated in the 1960s. Decades ago, Virginia Key Beach was a target of developers, always seeking valuable waterfront property. We'll speak with historians and Virginia Beach Park Trust members Gene Tinney and Dr. Enid Pickney, as well as University of Miami professor Dr. Gregory Bush. He's written the book White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space, and Miami's Virginia Key. That's next, First News. And this hour on Topical Currents with Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We have South Florida history with both land use and racial segregation issues at hand. The barrier island of Biscayne Bay's Virginia Key took on importance in the mid-20th century after then Dade County government yielded to pressure for a blacks-only Virginia Key Beach.
With us are two members of the historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust. First, its chairman, Gene Tinney, a Miami-based artist, educator, researcher, and activist. Welcome to you. Gene Tinney, welcome to you.
Thank you.
There we are.
Good to have you. Okay. And he's with us by phone, Dr. Enid Curtis Pinckney, a Miami-born historian, author, and former president of the Dade Heritage Trust.
Among many other stations, she's the founding president of the historic Hampton House Community Trust, a motel which is restored and the last of those from the segregation era in Miami history. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. And with us is University of Miami history professor, author, and activist Dr. Gregory Bush. We'll discuss his defining book on the subject, White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space, and Miami's Virginia Key. Welcome to you, Dr. Bush.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think I wanted to begin with a description of Virginia Key, the location, the size, its nature, its attributes, and just everything about it. It's physically, for those who may not know it.
Well, I guess I can weigh in on that. It's an 82.5-acre site. It's on Virginia Key, which is the island between the mainland of Miami and Key Biscayne. Virginia Key is about a 1,000-acre island, mostly, actually non-residential. And the historic park is a beautiful, scenic, natural site that, there's no tall buildings to interfere with the views. And we'll be talking about the history of it, but it is both an historic and an environmental jewel. And Virginia Key is one of the two southernmost barrier islands in the continental United States, along with Key Biscayne.
Well, Virginia Key is also the home of the Miami Seaquarium, a big wastewater treatment plant there, the Rosensteel Marine School, NOAA, and also the Rusty Pelican restaurant where we had dinner a couple of weeks ago.
If I can jump in.
Yes, please do, Professor Bush.
It's a hodgepodge, I think is the way to put it, jurisdictionally and beyond, so that there's no clear land use. City owns a big part of it. County owns pieces of it. And there's nobody that lives there, so politically, it's kind of a mess, to be honest, and that's part of the problem with it that we can talk
about. We were trying to figure out which part of the county was county-owned and which is city.
It's complex in some ways, and I can't give you a lot of detail, but along the causeway, there's a lot of county-owned land, and then the county conveyed pieces of land to the city. For example, Virginia Key Beach Park was conveyed from the county to the city in 1982, so that 80 acres was given to the city with all sorts of deed restrictions. So I think a lot of the problem with it overall is the complexity of a lot of this stuff and the fact that people don't really understand it very well.
Well, let's go back, because you have a lot of early history over grappling, the grappling over Virginia Key and what the land would be used for. So let's start there with the earliest that
Even
you
back
go back.
In the 20s.
Right.
Well, or earlier, you know, because way into the 19th century, Robert E. Lee came by at one point on a ship and others. And then in the 1920s and 30s, the Matheson family was involved. It went back and forth between the city and even Coral Gables at one point. But for our purposes, the real key, I think, to understand is the late 1930s, because people started to have a lot of dreams, if you will, of using it for a port, eventually for an airport by the 1940, early 1940s. And one of the key problems was the fact that how do you get out there? It was an island in the stream, if you will. So there were these visions of creating bridges out there. And one of the key people involved was Charles Crandon, now known for Crandon Park. And he actually, I mentioned this briefly in the book, took Ed Ball, who was of the DuPont interests.
Quite a force in Florida.
A huge force in Florida. And there's an oral history that I got from the History of Miami that testified to this. He said he took him out on a rowboat, rowed him out to Virginia Key and then Key Biscayne, gave him some, opened a couple coconuts and put rum in it, and essentially talked him into investing in a bridge going out there eventually, which World War II intervened, and that causeway, Rickenbacker Causeway, did not get completed until 1947, when the park out on Key Biscayne was also completed.
Dr. Enid Curtis Pinckney, give us a little bit of a thumbnail of your long life and career, particularly as an educator and also as a member of the trust of the Virginia Key Beach Park. Just a little bit more of your background for our listeners. It's quite fascinating.
Well, I was born in Miami, in Overtown. In fact, I was born at 1827 Northwest Fifth Court. Mm. And I went to Dunbar Elementary School. And from Dunbar, from first through sixth, and then in seventh grade, I went to Booker T. Washington High School. And I graduated from Booker T. Washington High School in 1949.
Just down the street from our studios here.
Yes, yes. And so my parents came here from the Bahamas, so I'm a first-generation American. My father came here in 1910. And he was one of those who helped to clean up Miami with a machete and the strength of his back. The developers would ask him to clear lots, and they would offer him lots as portion of his pay. And he refused to take the lots because he wanted the money. And I wish he had taken the lots.
Where was he working mostly? Was there one area, or was it all over?
It was all over. He worked on Miami Beach. In fact, my brother was born on Miami Beach at 4609 Pine Tree Drive. But when Dr. Sawyer and Nurse Turner, the midwife, went to report his birth, the Bureau of Vital Statistics refused to put Miami Beach on his birth certificate because he was black.
Right.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
That wasn't supposed to happen. But my parents were living on the premises of the people they worked for. They had servant quarters on the beach. And that was one of the things that I looked forward to, going over there when his boss would come to town, because they lived in Chicago, and they would only come down during the winter. And then when they would come, they would like to see how we had grown, and they'd like to see us. And so I would like stay up all night waiting to get ready to go to Miami Beach, because I look forward to going to Miami Beach.
Well, how about your first visits to Virginia Key? I suppose you went there by boat.
No.
No?
No. My father would not let us get on that boat.
So it wasn't until the causeway was built?
It was not until the causeway, because he was, my father used to dive for a living. Being from the Bahamas, he was very familiar with the water. And he was called the sponger. He used to dive for spongers and sell them. And so he would not let us go on the boat to Virginia Key Beach. We did not go there until they had the bridge.
Well, let's back up a little. Professor Bush and Gene Tinney, starting with you, Professor Bush. So let's go to 1945, even though there's a lot we've skipped over. What happened in 1945? First, leading up to that, explain the situation for blacks and their access, their ability, their
lack of access
to water in Miami.
I think what's important to understand at the outset is that African Americans could not legally go swimming in Biscayne Bay. In fact, some did earlier. There was, in fact, a beach owned by Dana Dorsey and Fisher Island in the early 20s briefly. But for the most part, they were forbidden. You know, so during the war, there was a movement by a number of African Americans and some of the leading political folks, Charles Crandon and others, to try to open up a beach. But it took forever, and it wasn't really happening. There were actually black servicemen serving on Virginia Key Beach for a period of time during World War II, but it took really the first post-war civil rights demonstration in the South by very few people at Haulover Beach, led by future Judge Lawson Thomas, that made it all happen. And I think one of the key reasons that it pushed successfully was that there's always fear of disorder that might scare off tourists. I think you see that theme time and time again in the 40s, 50s, up to now. Yeah,
especially with the proximity of Haulover to Greater Miami Beach.
Sure. So essentially, Lawson Thomas and Charles Crandon got on the phone, and they made a deal, and then Crandon said, okay, we'll open the beach, essentially.
Okay, so
it's May of 1945.
So it was called a wait-in.
Yes.
Correct? Mm-hmm. And how many people participated?
Something in the neighborhood of six or seven. There are a couple of different numbers.
That's
so very
it.
Few.
Okay.
Very few. And Lawson Thomas himself wasn't even wading in. He didn't like to go in the water. He didn't, when he was out on Virginia Key Beach eventually, apparently he didn't go swimming at all, so his
and
widow
he
told
wanted
him.
The waiters to be arrested. He
yes.
wanted that publicity and to have that on the record.
That's right. And he had a $500 in cash for bail and also maybe even calling, I think it was the longshoremen downtown, maybe to come up if there was going to be further trouble. So it was kind of very well plotted, and he had also had communication with Thurgood Marshall and others in terms of using civil disobedience.
Gene Tinney, how about your remembrances of Virginia Key and Beach?
Well, I'm a newcomer to Miami. I didn't get here until 1974. So I was very much inspired by listening to other people's memories. But, you know, I'd like to just add to what Dr. Bush just shared. There's an aspect of that demonstration that took place at Haulover that's not much known, and it was actually shared by Lawson Thomas's widow, Mrs. Eugenia B. Thomas, who has an elementary school named after her. She was one of the founding members of the trust, and I'm jumping a little ahead, to the time when we were kind of fighting to save this historic beach from development, and we were in a meeting at the city manager's office, and it was, a little bit contentious, because we were, essentially upsetting the apple cart of what was already in the pipeline. And at one point, there was a lull in the conversation, and Mrs. Thomas just kind of quietly remembered. She said, I remember the morning when Lawson went out there to that beach, and when the door clicked shut behind him, I was prepared not to ever see him alive again. Mm. And that completely changed the atmosphere in the room. And what that really related to, when Greg mentioned how few people showed up, a lot of people claimed that they would show up. I think when they had a chance to sleep on it, they realized that, you know, this wasn't the civil rights era that we know after 1955, when being arrested and all of that could be a badge of honor. You know, being arrested could just, you know, taint your reputation for the rest of your life, your prospects for employment. But even, I think, more threatening was the very real possibility, because there was a whole history of this throughout the South and in Florida, of situations where if you alerted the sheriff, you know, the authorities, and, you know, let them know that you were going to engage in civil disobedience, there was no real guarantee that the sheriff would be the one to show up. It would be just as likely that some, well, let's call them Ku Klux Klan thugs,
right,
would just be told, listen, some troublemakers are coming out there, and if anything happens to them, we just won't ask any questions. And so, folks, those who went, and those women in particular, Enid, you remember the name.
Yes, Mrs. Yeah. Brannon, Eleanor Brannon, Ms. Janesta Sweeting. And to piggyback on what you're saying, Gene, Miami was a different place back then. You have to also remember that Father Gibson, who was president of the NAACP, was asked to turn over the names of the members of the NAACP to the Johns Committee.
And what was the Johns Committee?
That was a statewide investigative committee.
And what year was that?
I don't remember the year. Late 50s.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And he refused to do it because the members were afraid that they would get fired from their jobs. And so that case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And, you know, of course, he won the case. But I think that, and this is why this book is so important. And I think that every black person should read this book. Now, white people could read it also. They need to read it also. But especially black people need to read this book.
Let's give the name of it right now again, because we haven't mentioned it in a while. That's the voice of Dr. Enid Pinckney. She's historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust board member and founding president and CEO of the historic Hampton House Community Trust. Also, before that, we were talking to Gene Tinney. He's chair of the board of the historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust. He's an artist, educator, writer, and activist in historic preservation and cultural affairs. And we also have with us Dr. Gregory Bush, an author and professor of history at University of Miami, where he's the director of the Institute for Public History. And he's written the book we're talking about, White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space, and Miami's Virginia Key. So go on, Dr. Pinckney.
Yes, because Miami has a lot of people who came here from someplace else, and they do not know the history. Not only that, the young people in our community do not know the history. And the people who are teaching our children don't know the history. So there needs to be a massive effort on the part of those who are educating to share this knowledge that's found in this book about what happened in Miami, Florida, because we don't know it and we don't have the appreciation. You have, you know, a lot of the people who come here think that Miami started with them. They don't know the history of Miami. And so they don't have the appreciation for where we are today. And they don't have the respect for where we are today. And I think that if they would read this book to understand the struggle and the price that was paid for us to have the freedom that we have now, then it would be very enlightening. And so, you know, I am so happy that I consider, and Greg, we're friends, and that I know Greg Bush. And the research that he has done on this book and the people that he has talked to get this information, many of them are dead. But their voice can be heard in this book, and their knowledge can be shared in this book. When I look at the people that are listed here, like Athalie Range and Father Culmer and Father Gibson and D.A. Darcy and Edward T. Graham and G.E. Graves. G.E. Graves was the attorney for the NAACP. How did we get these rights? People don't know. We lived in a segregated world.
People in the 21st century and see the skyscraper condos and the luxury don't realize that Miami was a very southern city.
When I came to Miami, there was a black water fountain and a white water fountain.
Right.
And I mean, I remember, and I believe there was a black ladies' room,
yes,
bathroom, and a white,
yes,
ladies' room.
Right. And we sat in the back of the bus.
And you, mm-hmm, sat in the back. I think, you know, Greg, you just kind of passed over this, or you said it very quickly, but I'd like to you to go back, that demonstration on Hallover Beach was one of the first demonstrations, civil rights demonstrations in the South.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. Most people associate civil rights demonstrations, you know, 1954, 1955. But in fact, what I try to underscore in this book, that there's a lot more to the civil rights movement than, let's say, either violent demonstrations or others, like people think of the March on Washington, too. This was a demonstration for a beach, for access to a beach.
For access to water.
Right, water in that sense. And, you know, a lot of people think of voting rights and education, all of which are extremely important and a lot of people know something about. But this is atypical, if you will. And yet it does say a lot, because I think, and part of the aspect that I try to get to in this book, is that there was a struggle for public space, a struggle for access to public space. And that's gone through a lot of our history, and it's come up to the present. I try to link it, we may get to this later, to current issues.
It's very interesting the way you weave the two battles for civil rights, for public space.
It goes on today.
Exactly.
That's part of the issue that I'm trying to raise to people's minds in terms of planning public access to Virginia Key Beach, not just the beach itself now, which is by and large open, but there are all these planning issues about the Marine Stadium area, whether there should be parks there or it should all be commercialized, et cetera. And they're very real issues, and they're structural consequences, because we, as we may get to too, we have pushed for a Virginia Key Advisory Board that would oversee the planning and that would try to maximize in many ways the use of a lot of the public spaces on Virginia Key and frankly beyond.
Gene Tinney, could you explain why there was a need to create the Virginia Key Beach Park Trust in the 20th century?
Sure.
Or early 21st, actually.
Early 21st, actually. This actually goes back to Dr. Gregory Bush. Greg called me. We collectively in Miami, I think it was one of the high points in the city's and the county's history, that we saved the Miami Circle. And that struggle brought together people who otherwise never would have met. I would not have met Greg. And so kind of coming out of that, I got a call from Greg informing me that there was a plan to develop Virginia Key Beach, the historic site, into this $350 a night exclusive resort. Mm. And this was kind of working its way well down the pipeline. I went to a public meeting. I said, you know, I heard what was being said. I got to meet Mabel Miller there, who was a longtime activist and friend of Virginia Key, the island. And I brought up the fact that, well, you know, you do know that the site you're talking about has some historic value. And, you know, and their response was, yeah, gee, that's important. Yeah, well, you know, we could put up a plaque or something like that. And, you know, that was one of those, oh, well, no, we don't think so. And so we were able to marshal a few more people. I knew that as a newcomer, my voice would not be the one most likely to be listened to. But I did reach out to three key people who were Garth Reeves of the Miami Times newspaper, Dr. Dorothy Shields, the founder of the Black Archives, and Mrs. Athley Raines. And Enid, of course, was president of Data Heritage Trust at the time and was way too busy to even try to think about taking on anything new, but was easily able to join it once somebody took it on. And Mrs. Raines, to her great credit, in her 80s, took this on, renewing her role as a matriarch. And that's what essentially, it started out with an informal group, and then we got recognized as a task force, and then we got upgraded to an advisory board. I think a lot of the people thought that this little effort would blow over. Oh, it's just a few old ladies and tree huggers and,
Right.
But realized that, no, we were very serious about the fact that here was a site that was both environmentally sensitive and remarkable, really, and so historically significant that, as Enid was saying earlier, no, this is not history that needs to be erased. And I'd like to jump back to another aspect of this, though, that came to mind, if I may, as Enid and Greg were speaking earlier, and that is, this, what Miami was, that here, it didn't have that hard-bitten, hateful edge that other places in the South had, but that was not altogether absent from here either. I was fascinated to find out, for example, that there used to be a monument in front of the Dade County Courthouse. I think it was erected in 1812, and it informed anybody who came by that on this spot, on a certain date, a white man was tarred and feathered for advocating social equality.
Well, now, I think you're talking about the priest at St. Agnes Episcopal Church. That did happen. But I want to talk about Greg a little bit, too. Because actually, Greg is responsible for the Virginia Key Beach Trust.
Okay, so can we put a period there and take a short break and do a little business, and then we will start right there, Dr. Pinckney. Okay, that was, of course, the voice of Dr. Enid Pinckney, Historic Virginia Key Park Trust Board Member and Founding President and CEO of the Historic Hampton House Community Trust. Also with us, Gene Tinney, Chair of the Board of the Historic Virginia Key Park Trust, and Dr. Greg Bush is an author and professor of history at University of Miami. We're discussing his book, The White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space, and Miami's Virginia Key. We'll be right back.
And we're back 35 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're talking about the historic Virginia Key and Virginia Key Beach with Gene Tinney, Dr. Enid Curtis Pinckney, and also Dr. Gregory Bush. Dr. Pinckney, we were leaving off with you.
Yes, and I said that Greg is really responsible, because actually, what Greg came to me about the situation that was happening on Virginia Key Beach, the ecotourism, the development, the whatever. And when he came to me, as Gene said, I told him I could not get involved in that because I was so involved with the circle. I was president of Dade Heritage Trust, and we were fighting the city of Miami trying to preserve the circle.
For those newcomers, the Miami Circle, the prehistoric findings, archaeological findings.
Right, right. And so, but Gene Tinney was one of the few black people I saw down there demonstrating with us. And so I referred Greg to Gene because I knew that he was interested in historic preservation. And so this is the reason. And I'd like for that story to be known, that actually it was because we did not know anything about what the city was doing and how they had planned to develop the beach, Virginia Key Beach. We knew nothing about it. And that was during the time that the beach was not being used. Well, it was closed.
Shut down.
Well, let's go back tonight to the 40s and 50s in its heyday, but to establish, first of all, that finally the African Americans were given a beach, and it was Virginia Key Beach. And go ahead from there, Dr.
Bush. And it was packed.
And it was packed, segregated, of course. And the African American community developed an incredible degree of pride of place in Virginia Key Beach. They had, and Ina can talk about this more, they had Easter services there, they had baptisms there, they had all sorts of stars, musicians coming out there. Martin Luther King, by the late 50s and 60s, came there frequently and recreated there, if you will. So it was a major, and I guess I try to make the case, kind of a proto-political place. I mean, they didn't hold huge rallies there from everything I heard, but they developed a real sense of solidarity and their identity. And that's very important, I think, for the future. And yet, after the beach was then deaccessioned, after integration came in the 1960s, and African Americans could go anywhere else,
right,
then memory fades. And that's essentially the bigger, longer story, is that a lot of African Americans went elsewhere, and then there was a sense on the part of many of kind of shame about that beach to some degree, to some. Correct me, Enid, if you think that's right, that this was the segregated beach and now it's integrated. So the memories faded about the importance of that. And I think when it was going to go away in 1999, then, you know, I started. But I mean, a lot of people, African Americans, said, no, this is means something to our community. And that picked up. I was very conscious that me, a white geeky professor, was not going to change the political equation in all this, that African Americans had to be central. Thus, talking to Enid and Athley and Jean and whatnot, they became, you know, really important actors, and Eugenia Thomas and many others.
So the reason it went into its state of disrepair, or for the reason for its demise, was because integration happened and they could go to any beach they want.
That's part
wanted.
Of it.
So what else happened? What else was going on politically that made the beach shut down, that caused the beach to be shut down?
I think some of it relates to costs and the fact that it didn't seem to be cost effective to keep it open by city and county city administrators in particular. Increasingly in the 1970s and 1980s, there was a mentality that grew into our era too, that parks should pay for themselves, that parks weren't places that should necessarily be free for people to enjoy, but that they need to generate revenue. I personally think that's a dangerous path that a lot of parks went into, and that's what we kind of had to go into a lot of corrective action in the 1990s and early part of the century, and trying to build coalitions between Hispanics, African Americans, and others to try to say, no, that the public parks, a kind of public park coalition, really has a value in the sense of community around here.
Or selling off commercial parcels of parks.
Which they do, or leasing them out is generally what they do. They usually don't sell them off, they lease them out. And politicians, I think, and the public, had a real cynicism about public space. People don't like to go to parks. You know, it's too hot down here. They got to rather go to air-conditioned places or big stadiums.
Bayfront Park.
Right, well.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's open air in many ways, parts of it. But there was I found and kind of tried to detail an incredible culture of cynicism that took over in the 1990s in particular about parks, public spaces, costs of them. People don't go there. Who cares?
But didn't you even say you were guilty of it yourself before the whole thing with the American Airlines arena, that you yourself were suffering from that cynicism?
To some degree, but I mean, I did a lot of writing and thinking about it. So, I mean, I was kind of defining the cynicism,
right,
I guess. And I could see it, but I don't think I was, well, maybe to some degree I was cynical too, because Miami has a lot, long way to grow as far as I'm concerned then, and I still think it does. And we need, you know, better coalitions of younger people and older people that stand up for these kinds of issues.
And I think that we need to be aware and keep vigilant about Virginia Key Beach as it is now, because I don't think that developers have given up on developing Virginia Key Beach. Mm-hmm. I think that there are still people who would like to have some hotels out there and ecotourism or whatever they call it on Virginia Key Beach.
Well, just look at its proximity to Fisher Island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, I don't think that we should be complacent and say that. I know that this was a big achievement, because I feel the achievement, the fact that we were able to get a beach, was a big achievement for black people in Miami. And back in that time, this was before the civil rights era. But what I'm also saying is that I don't want us to just relax. I want us to be vigilant about the beach and that it remains open to the public, so that because money talks, and money, you know, can buy politicians. So I think that the whole community needs to wake up and keep alert as to what is happening to Virginia Key Beach, so that it will continue to be a public beach.
If I can jump in briefly here, this relates to your theme, Enid, but it's a little broader too. In 2010, as some of you may know, there was a huge public outcry against a master plan for Virginia Key, the entire island, which included Virginia Key Beach. And the public basically didn't like all the commercialization under the former mayor and the regime at the time. So hundreds turned out for other charrettes or design workshops. And we came up with alternative plans that you can see online, although that's kind of even questionable sometimes how that's put up online. And the city commission passed our alternative vision for Virginia Key unanimously. One of the key tenets was to have a Virginia Key advisory board overseeing the development of the entire island, including the plan for a historic beach. It was not instituted for 6 years.
Who's the bigger player, the city or the county?
Yeah, it's
city,
very...
at this point. I would say the city. The city owns most of it. So the city is definitely the bigger player. I just don't think, with all due respect, because as I think I've said in the book, too, I don't see any clear villains in the book. I try not to look at it that way.
Right.
History is more systemic, it seems to me, than anything else. But we need better leadership in moving forward in doing the right kind of planning to preserve the historic beach and to enhance the entire integrity of the island, including thematic linkages, preserving more public space around the Marine Stadium, preserving the Marine Stadium, because there's a huge constituency for that. The leadership isn't there. The one person I will give significant credit to is Commissioner Francis Suarez, who we worked with in the Urban Environment League to come up with the legislation to create the Virginia Key Advisory Board this past December, January. We worked closely with him. He was very positive, and I think that's a good step.
All right, we're going to bring in Gene Tinney a little more when we get back. That is Dr. Gregory Bush. We're talking about his book, White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space in Miami's Virginia Key. Also with us is Dr. Enid Pinkney. And our last break. We'll be right back.
And we return. It's South Florida History on today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're talking about Virginia Key, one of the barrier islands in Biscayne Bay, with the chairman of the Virginia Key Beach Park Trust. He's Gene Tinney. Also, Dr. Enid Curtis Pinkney. She's a Miami-born historian. She's a former president of the Dade Heritage Trust and also on the board of the Virginia Key Beach Park Trust. And, of course, University of Miami history professor, author, and activist, Dr. Gregory Bush. We're talking about his book, White Sand, Black Beach, Civil Rights, Public Space, and Miami's Virginia Key. Enid Pinkney, take us back a little more. After the causeway was built and it was such a frequent recreation area for African Americans of the community, tell us some of the times you had there, and maybe reminisce a little bit about the famous train that was there and the carousel.
Yes, we enjoyed going there for picnics and just going there to be there.
Some photos in the book of just huge parking lot filled up with those big clunky 1950s cars.
Right,
the
correct.
Buicks and the Olds and the Chevys.
Correct. And, you know, my father was a minister, so he would have baptisms out there. When someone was saved, converted in the church, and a part of the ritual of joining the church was that you had to be baptized.
What a beautiful setting in those waters.
Yes, yes. I can see my father right now in his white robe, and then he had a white cap on his head, and the persons who were being, the converts, as they were called, were in white robes, and they would have to walk out into the water, and they had a headpiece on their heads, and they would just walk out. They would get wet, and my father would, and then someone else would help him on one side of the person and would say, "I baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost." And then they would dunk them in the water, and they would come up all wet. And, you know, those are memories that I carry with me now. And you know, and other people have other memories of Virginia Key Beach. And that's why it's like it's sacred.
I was wondering, because there were curfews imposed on African Americans at that time, and I was wondering if there were curfews at Virginia Key Beach.
I don't remember any curfews.
I know it was self-policed, but yeah.
I don't remember curfews.
Okay. And I was wondering, Jean Tinney, how you got involved, since you're not a native and you came here not that long ago, you said.
Well, only 45 years.
Well, well, that's, I guess, yeah, not that long.
I'm an honorary Miamian.
Okay.
I got involved simply in much the same way I got involved with the Miami Circle, that here was in this country, we don't even use the word patrimony, but, you know, this idea of collective heritage that the people of a nation own, that's very important. And I just saw the need for this. And, you know, it's not just a place.
Did we lose you? I think we did. Hmm. Okay, we'll have to pick it up. It's not just a place, and
about patrimony.
Yeah. Dr. Bush, you argue that Virginia Key Beach offers a common ground of hope for a better future. Would you just expand on that before we get Jean Tinney back on the phone? What do you mean?
Well, I think if you look over the totality of what took place at Virginia Key and around it, it's a very positive story about community coming together to preserve the beach, to preserve memory, to expand the sense of what we are as Miami area residents. So I think it's a real challenge to keep that going, and it gives me hope in many ways that a lot more people can see something beyond, and I'll put a term that I write about a little, a culture of spectacle around us. Because I think too many people are dazzled by, to be honest, big sports stadiums and all big money that goes into things like that. I'm not against any one,
right,
you know, sport or anything like that. That's not the issue. But I think that we need to get back to simpler values. We need to get back to open spaces, nature. And Virginia Key has that. And so why would we want to spoil it? So I think we need to really think about those kinds of issues. And that's what I try to do at the end of the book. And I link it to, as you may know, to something called Nature Links for Lifelong Learning, which is an organization that I run for young adults with intellectual disabilities. And the trust has been very favorable in having us out there for several years. We have another program at the Frost Science Museum, one at the Coral Gables Congregational Church. So it's a linkage of civil rights between the African-American experience and other people with disabilities, or a better way to put it is unique abilities. So I see that. I feel that. The trust has been very supportive, and I thank Enid and Jean for supporting. We took over a couple of years ago the food concession building, and so we taught cooking there and used gardens, and we want to bring it back.
And if you would just explain a little bit more about what the Nature Links for Lifelong Learning is, just a little more about it.
Sure. I mean, bottom line is that there are a lot of young adults, 18 to 30 roughly, once they get out of high school, they have very little to do. And they often sit at home watching TV and regress. And there are some programs, but we challenge them to do an awful lot in terms of learning about the natural world. So we do cooking and gardening and hydrology and a whole bunch of challenging things. We take them on trips and whatnot. The organization's website is naturelinks.net. And so I urge people, if they're interested in this population, to check it out and give us a call.
Dr. Bush, with your long leadership of the Urban Environmental League, touch on why projects such as Virginia Key are so important to you and keeping the body of water, which was instrumental in why human habitation was always here, which is the beautiful bay, okay. Having ordinary people be able to keep in touch with it instead of just expensive high-rises and hotels.
There are tens of thousands of people that live in the interior of Miami-Dade County who've probably never been to the waterfront. And I think there should be greater public access with the public school system and beyond to give younger people experience of the water. And I think the waterfront is gorgeous. It's one of our major assets, and we absolutely need to be able to preserve it. With the Urban Environment League, we fought in relation to Bicentennial Park, as you may know, Miami Circle, Virginia Key, and Enid's been on the board of the Urban Environment League, and Jean is now. And so, I see these as major issues of civil rights to public space, but we have to understand the issues and the history behind them, and they're going to go away.
You know, I want to talk about the swimming, because when I went, even though, I went to Virginia Key Beach, I didn't know how to swim. And when I went
There was some pretty rough swimming over there.
Yeah.
When I went to college, I went to Talladega College in Talladega, Alabama, and I had to take swimming. That was one of the courses. And, they were surprised that I was from Florida and didn't know how to swim. Mm. So that was, and I'm pointing out to you that was a denial of my right that I should have had, but I didn't have. And I had to go all the way to Alabama to learn how to swim. So I think that this is something that we need to know and to understand from whence we have come.
And Jean Tinney, you're back now. If you could finish, do you remember what you were saying? You were talking about it not just being a place,
yeah. Patrimony.
And patrimony.
I certainly can. I think the way we're looking at this whole thing is that it's as much, if not more, about the future than the past, but we need to know the past. And I think the point that really needs to be made is I touched on earlier that there was this kind of undercurrent of, Ku Klux Klan presence. They had the 1923, Ku Klux Klan won the Orange Bowl Parade Float Prize. I mean, they were considered part of the community. But the African-American community, much of it rooted in the Bahamas, was so exemplary in the kind of leadership, the kind of achievement, so that, the achievement of getting the beach was really a victory for the human race. And this is a point that we really want to, make, that it's the kind of involvement, that the kind of example that was set really is what all communities, all parks, need to benefit from going forward.
We're just about out of time.
I was thinking that.
We certainly want to thank you.
Thank you so much, though, for having us.
Well, thank you.
And thank you, Greg.
Thank you. And Jean Tinney is the chair of the board of the historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust, an artist, educator, writer, and activist. And also with us was Dr. Enid Curtis Pinckney, historic Virginia Key Beach Park Trust board member, founding president and CEO of the Historic Hampton House Community Trust. Thank you, Dr. Pinckney, also.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And Dr. Gregory Bush, author and professor of history at U of M, also director of the Institute for Public History, and founder and president of Nature Links. And thank you all for being with us.
Thank you for having us.